That was the first question I had on the next lesson, to remind yourself, or not question, but statement there, and it, remind yourself of the word spoken to Abraham there in Genesis 15. Count the stars, so shall your descendants be, he said. Strangers in a foreign land. That one has come to fruition. He's gotten, the people are in the foreign land. Oppressed. We'll see that as we go into the first couple of chapters. God will judge that nation. We'll get to that, of course, with the plagues, and then come out with many possessions. All those things will come to fruition as we go forward. What has now become of that clan of 70 or so as the book begins was the next question I had. In verse 7, it's another one of those stackings of superlatives. The inspiration of the Holy Spirit certainly wants us to see something there. It says, but the sons of Israel were fruitful and increased greatly and multiplied and became exceedingly mighty, so that the land was filled with them. It was not an ordinary population growth, I don't think. I think we can see in that God's providence continues to work as it works toward that first promise there from Genesis 15 and verse 5. Count the stars, so shall your descendants be. In a psalm that begins, O give thanks to the Lord, call upon His name, make known His deeds among the people. Sing to Him, sing praises to Him, speak of all His wonders. Verse 5 of that 105th Psalm, remember His wonders which He has done, His marvels, and the judgments uttered by His mouth. Down in verse 24 then, God caused His people to be very fruitful. Certainly His hand was at work. We can see that. Acts 7:17, Stephen would say, But as the time of the promise was approaching, which God had assured to Abraham, the people increased and multiplied in Egypt. So they are now, as we begin the book, a vast multitude of people, not a distinct nation yet, but they soon will be. Acts 7:17 sets the stage. The time of the promise had come. So what about the king? What does it say? What are we told of the king of Egypt and his attitude toward the people as we begin the book of Exodus? A new king which did not know Joseph. The Waldrons seem to think that the change had already begun by the time the Genesis closes. I've never given a whole lot of thought to that till I read that in their book the first time a few years ago. Joseph's promise that God would visit them. They said the literal translation would be rescue. We're not told. Doesn't mean it didn't happen, but we're not told of a state funeral for Joseph like we are for Jacob. Possibly those conditions had already started to change. For whatever reason, or whenever it happened at the beginning of Exodus, it has indeed happened. There in 24 and 25 of Psalm 105 again, it says that God caused them to be fruitful, and He made them stronger than their adversaries. And then later He turned their heart to hate His people and deal craftily with His servants. Verses 9 and 10, the king worried that they were mightier than the Egyptians and could possibly ally themselves with enemies in the time of war. And then, of course, the affliction begins. As taskmasters are appointed to oversee hard labors, begins with building the storage cities of Ramses and Pithom, lands near the land of Goshen where they were living. And what does God say, or the narrative say, happened despite that hard labor? Yeah, they're very ineffective. beginning there in verse 12, the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread out, they were in dread of the sons of Israel. It says in verse 13, they compelled them even further. More rigorous labors in the field, after not only building, but providing bricks, all those things. What other measures did the king see fit to take as he tried to stem the tide of this population growth? What's that? Yeah, exactly. They're instructed to kill the male children. They would not do it, since they feared the Lord. They refused to comply. When asked about it, they used the excuse that Hebrew women were vigorous. They would give birth before we could get to them. Of course, God, they were blessed then because of that. Then we begin chapter 2. We see Moses' birth. This king's edict of killing the babies is the male children fully in effect as a son is born to Amram and Jochebed, we find out later, from the tribe of Levi. It says they hid him for 3 months until they were unable to do so anymore. They did so by faith. A quick mention, not even named by name in Hebrews 11, but there they stand alongside all those others for their faith, not afraid of the king's edict, but willing to do so because he was lovely. Lovely in the sight of God, as Stephen would call in the book of Acts. Beautiful is how it's described in most translations here. They placed him in the basket along the bank of the River Nile. Stood Miriam with him to see what would happen, keep an eye on him. Pharaoh's daughter then discovered her as she came down to the river to bathe. Heard the baby crying. God's providence at work, I would say. Right place, right time. The right cry. And she has pity on him. Recognized him as a Hebrew child. And Miriam, of course, shows great courage as she comes and speaks out, volunteering to go find someone to nurse the child. And then Moses is taken into the palace after whatever time went by and adopted as a son to her, grows up in the palace. Stephen tells us in Acts 7, educated in all the learning of the Egyptians, describes him as a man full of power in words and deeds. From Josephus, we learn that he was a general in Pharaoh's army, so indeed a man attuned to leading a great group of people, which would come in handy. And then the events that caused him to flee. He goes out to his people, witnesses an Egyptian beating one of the Hebrews, strikes the man down, buries him, thinks he has it hidden until the next day when he's counseling two other Hebrews who were fighting, and they ask, "Are you going to kill us like you did the man yesterday?" And of course, he had assumed, it says, Stephen tells us this detail, that he had assumed they would understand he was coming to their rescue, but obviously they did not. Seeing no one, after hearing that, the king found out, of course, and intends to kill him, and Moses flees the land. That's probably as far as we'll get this morning. We'll pick up there before we go any further on Wednesday and talk about where he fled to. And then we will move forward. We'll try to finish that lesson. We've got... We may get started, if I can force through the narrative, we may get started into the lesson on the plagues pretty quickly. So we'll attempt to do that, try to do that, and So be ready for that. Start on that next lesson. That lesson has a lot of questions. It's another one of those. You can answer most of them without even looking. It was intended to be two class periods, but I have done such a phenomenal job of getting behind that we won't have two class periods. Thank you for your attention and your comments.